Man, you all sound great. You know you sound great? You know that? I hope you all know that. That's Cliff Brucker's Full Circle Sextet featuring Leo Russell. And they're going to be at the Linda. Leo Russo, I apologize. Thank you for the chuckle that alerted to me that I screwed up. Leo Russo will be at the Linda on Thursday, the 26th of January. That's otherwise known as the day after tomorrow. The show celebrates a musical friendship four decades deep between Cliff and Leo. Cliff is an active drummer, pianist, bandleader, sideman, and of course, Leo is one of the great saxophonists of our time. Cliff and Leo will they join us now, along with Leo's longtime friend, guitarist Mike Novakowski. Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Cliff, great to have you here.
Thanks, Joe.
And Leo Russo, I apologize for screwing up your name, but thank you very much for being with us. It's really nice to have you.
You're not
the
first one.
I know, but I just... it's really great to have you on the program. So how did this particular program come about, Cliff?
Well, Full Circle came together when I was an adjunct professor at Schenectady Community College. I was there for 22 years. And when we did our addition on the building under the direction of Dean Meckley, Bill Meckley, we added a state-of-the-art studio into the new building. And, of course, the adjuncts were free to use the studio. And I was like, oh, this is great. I've been wanting to make a record for a long time, but didn't have the funds. Now I've got the state-of-the-art studio. Sten Isaacson, who is the head of the music industry over there, is a great, phenomenal engineer. So he engineered the album for us, and then I just got Leo and all of us together that have known each other for forever. Otto Gardner on bass, who you've known Leo for, what, 30 years or so?
Oh, yeah.
Otto's one of the great first call bass players in Syria. And Mike and Leo, of course, go way back even farther than Leo and I do, playing with the Teresa Broadwell Band. And then the interesting thing is I said, who else? On piano, you know, I'm going to call it my friend Larry Ham.
Yeah.
Now, I went to school with Larry Ham. We graduated in 1981 from Crane School of Music.
Yeah.
Larry went on to become a world-famous international pianist. He's been on the road with Illinois Jacquet, a lot of famous jazz musicians. He's played with everybody. And he lives downstate now in Millbrook. And I called him up out of the blue after all these decades. I said, Larry, hey, man, it's Cliff. Hey. I said, you want to come up, spend the weekend, and make a record with us? I'm there. So that was that. And then, and lastly, not about least, but was at the time a 28-year-old trumpet player just up and coming in the area named Dylan Canterbury, who is just a walking encyclopedia of jazz and a phenomenal trumpet player. And he is now working at the College of St. Rose and also Schenectady Community College as a music professor. So I got him. So we got the youth there, and we got the age and wisdom with Leo, and Leo's just getting ready to turn 80. So I said, we got to get you on wax, you know? So we put the band together and made the first record, Full Circle. And the reason we called it Full Circle is because we all went around and we all came back together. And also, too, it has personal meaning for me because I got my master's in jazz piano, and I spent a couple of decades playing both instruments and being schizophrenic that way, musically schizophrenic around the area. So for me, it was coming full circle and playing drums and playing with master musicians. Larry Ham is one of the greatest piano players I've ever played with. So that's how it all began.
It's a great, great stuff. So, Leo, what is it? How does it feel to get back and doing all this?
Well, it's, it's my bag. I just, I'm a... originally really a bebopper, and it was just nice to start getting back to playing my true love.
How do you define that, being a bebopper?
I don't know, progressive jazz, bebop. The best thing I can think of would be Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie,
right?
That period. And course, I'm not a young guy, so I go back to the 40s, the late 40s is when I started to get into this music, you know, so.
Did your style change?
Well, I did a lot of club dating, you know, trying to make a living. You do weddings, you do banquets and right. so on, and you got to play the things that you don't really want to play.
Right. Okay. So let me rephrase the question. Okay. Is so, yeah, we'll work for food, right? You do what you have to do to pay the bills. Got it. But for you, if you're left to your own devices, do you feel that there's been a transformation?
Well, you know, I go through that whole period. For instance, when I was 18 years old, first thing I did was I heard Elvis Presley. And, of course, that was the one thing that says, okay, music is going to go in a different direction. You know, so, and it did, naturally. And it just kind of, like, took me away from what I wanted to do. And then, you know, making a living and so on, I finally got back to what I consider, bebop, progressive jazz, and then modern jazz, which I love. And I would say in some cases, that's basically what we do, some modern jazz. So.
And you spent, what, a good decade out in L.A.?
I went to Los Angeles. You know, I went on the road at 17.
Yeah.
And then I wound up in Los Angeles at 18. I stayed till I was 27 years old, and I just got tired of that weather out there, basically, is what it was. Really. You know.
Sunshine and heat.
And I just, you know, one day I just decided, I says, I'm from Albany.
Yeah.
Says, I'm going home because I like to fish and hunt.
Sure.
You know, and I have that reputation with everybody saying, would you rather play or would you rather fish? And I really don't know how to answer that question, you know.
No, I understand. It seems, and maybe I'm off on this, but 17 seems very young.
Well, you know, my history is kind of a strange one because when I started playing saxophone at 11, I knew right away what I wanted to do because I wanted the saxophone. I bugged my mother for about 3 years to get me a saxophone, and she finally did. And I, you know, started, like I said, at 11 years old. I entered different contests. I won them and so on. And then my brothers, three brothers, we were all in the music business, and we had a group, so we went out west. And I stayed with them for a while, and then I wanted to go on my own. Mm. And so I did that, and, you know, I worked with... I couldn't begin to tell you all the people that I worked for that are, you know, were famous, a little here, a little there, and so on, and then eventually came back here, still went out to Vegas, got married, went back out there, worked, and then we started to have a family, and we had five kids, and at that point, after the first one, I decided that I need to make a change, but I still wanted to play what I do. Well, at least what I think I do best.
Sure.
But as we mentioned earlier, you know, you have to do all the, and I'm not knocking them because they gave me a good living, especially on the weekends, you know, the weddings and yeah. that sort of thing. So it was very helpful. I got into teaching by accident. I never wanted to be a music teacher, but I got back into my education, which I waited all those years to get my degrees and completed my, you know, bachelor's, my master's. I taught in the city of Troy, which was, you know, like I said, I never thought I'd be a teacher, but I did that for 27 years. And after the 27 years, I decided that I'm only going to play jazz.
Yeah.
You know, I cut out everything else, and that brings me up to now.
Mike, what's your story?
My story is that I've been a musician around the Capital District for many, many years and have played with Leo most of those years. I think we first started playing together in the early 80s, I think, with a group called Doc Scanlon's Rhythm Boys back then. And then we've been in lots of different combinations that since then, especially with my wife Teresa Broadwell, who's a jazz singer and violinist, and we've done a lot of work together. And I just love playing with Leo. It requires, I think, a special approach. Whenever I play with Leo, I try to think about leaving space, because Leo has this sound out of his horn that is a round, resonant, rich, emotional sound. And if you crowd it with, you know, lots of ornamentation and altered chords, you're going to lose the experience of hearing that rich sound that is really the core of Leo. So when I play with these guys, I try to think about that. How do you support that and bring it out in a way that still expresses yourself, but doesn't cover up your great colleagues that you're playing with?
That's interesting. So you let it breathe a bit.
That's a good way to think about it, breathing. Yeah, the music really does breathe. And with this group, breathing is the right word, because it just swings right from the start. It sort of locks in, which is really Cliff and his mastery guiding the rhythm section. It locks in that relaxed yet driving, moving forward sound, and it for some reason this combination just seems to lock and click.
I feel like being the band leader, people used to say, not that I'm comparing myself to Miles Davis, but people used to say, yeah, Miles was a great forward thinker, but Miles knew how to choose the musicians around him. He knew how to put people together that would complement each other. And so I was very conscious of that, knowing that. And the funny thing is, Larry Ham didn't know any of these guys. He was my friend. Larry Ham walks into the studio, and we do one or two takes of each tune, and it sounded like we've been playing together forever. So these are the kind of musicians I like to work with, the guys who listen, leave space for each other. It's not all about ego. It's about the whole, you know, the whole as one thing.
And it really speaks to sort of the common language in the jazz community these days. People, you know, listen to these great leading artists, develop their own thing, but there is a common language that brings everybody together, and I think we all kind of knew that language.
Oh, sorry. I mean, for me, the number one thing is we're friends.
Yeah.
And I think that's main thing. We're friends, so it makes it so much easier to play. For instance, with Mike, and I've said this to him many occasions. I don't know if he believes me or not, but he knows exactly how to play, how to solo, and how to be in the background. He's a master at that. And he and I guess another guitarist, Jim Hall, reminds me of Jim Hall.
Well, that's
a lot.
A high compliment.
And I would rather work with Mike.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, Jim Hall is dead. Jim Hall is
He knows how to back up.
Yeah, so he's easier.
Player.
And
yeah.
You know, you charge more. But
And it's funny, speaking of friends, that's when you met Larry Ham. Yeah. And now you and Larry are good friends. Yeah. And now Larry calls him for gigs.
I work with him occasionally, although he's downstate. But, you know, it's worth the drive.
Is that another euphemism for dead? No. He's downstairs.
Yeah. I like that.
So this just seems fun for you then to bring
this.
Oh,
this is heaven for me.
Yeah.
You know, because as Leo said, well, we have similar circumstances. I was in high school. I was 17. I was home with mononucleosis.
Oh.
And a knock comes on the door, and it's my buddy. And he goes, hey, these guys, they need a drummer to go on the road with them. Because their drummer is in the he OD'd. He's in the hospital.
Oh, dear.
So my parents are like, you're not going anywhere.
Downstate.
Yeah. He's downstate.
Yeah.
And they let me go. And, boy, talk about getting a musical education, like Leo, you know. And it wasn't later until they came back and got my degrees. Yeah. And then I started teaching at the College of St. Rose and at Skanky Community College. The other thing I want to mention, though, unfortunately, last Saturday, Otto Gardner called me up and said, I've got COVID.
Yeah.
Enter another friend of ours, Pete Tuigo, who you guys have known forever.
On bass. Yeah.
And another, he's another stalwart.
Another friend.
Another
guy who plays out all the time. He's just always playing. And then the next day, I got a text message from Larry.
Yeah,
Joe. You know what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The worst.
More COVID.
Yeah, he's got COVID. So, but the good thing is, on volume two, there are three cuts on there with the great Pete Levin. Now, Pete Levin is Tony Levin's brother. Yeah. They're famous downstate. Tony Levin, of course, is the bass player who plays with King Crimson.
King Crimson, yeah. He's a frequent guest on our
and
program here.
Pete Levin is a legend in the music business. He's played with everybody from Gil Evans to, you know, everybody. And he's on three cuts on the album. In fact, three of my favorite cuts. We do a version of Emily, and he plays this beautiful intro, and then Leo just caresses the melody. So I called up Pete. I said, Pete, can you help us out and play? He goes, sure, I'll play. So it's going to be kind of a it'll still be the same band, just be a slightly different.
That's fun. Well, and that's sort of what it is, right?
Yeah. That's how jazz is. Yeah.
Yeah, yep. You get everybody together. That seems like an awful lot of fun. What'd you say? You'll be caressing the.
Leo was caressing the melody.
Caressing the melody. Yeah. Did you realize that's what you're doing?
What does that mean?
Yeah. Well.
Well, those are Tim Coakley.
Well, you'll be doing it in public, so make sure.
Those are Tim Coakley's words. If you read his review there.
That's right. Even better than Volume One.
The way Leo caresses the melody.
Oh, that's right. Lord. Emily will bring you a tear to your eye. These guys are so good. It's
maybe
scary.
We should throw that in there.
Yeah. Well, it's a great. It sounds like just a wonderful, wonderful time. It's Cliff Rucker's Full Circle Sextet featuring Leo Russell, and you're going to be at... What the hell? Look, can I just show you something? Look, it's not wrong. It's just I'm an idiot.
That's okay.
It's
all right.
Russell.
It's close enough.
Is there a Leo Russell?
I don't know. But as Nate, you know Nate Shy, right?
Yeah. Nate.
I taught Nate for 4 years at St. Rose, and I called him Nate Sheed the whole time. And then after I got to know him, I called him Nate Sheed for another 4 years.
I didn't know Nate was a Rosebud. I'm a Rosebud.
Nate was my student there.
I didn't know that.
And so anyway, one day somebody goes, why are you calling him Nate Sheed? His name is Nate Shied.
Shied.
And well, I said to Nate, I said, why didn't you correct me? He goes, I've been called worse.
Well, it's Leo Russo. A lot of times I will screw up in the writing of it, but this is, it is right. I'm just not reading it right because I'm an idiot. Leo Russo, I thank you. It's great to have you here.
Thank you for
sharing. I think I need a little caressing myself here. I think to fix things up. Cliff, Leo, and of course Mike Novakowski. Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate
thank
it. You.
Thanks, Joe.
Well, gentlemen, have a great time. It's going to be at the Linda Thursday night, the 26th at 8 p.m. thelinda.org. thelinda.org. You're listening. Yeah. Check the weather, but it'll be fine. Thelinda.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WMC comes from the Green Tone Bookstore, an Oneonta independent bookseller bringing new fiction, nonfiction, and specialty books, serving the local and college community, book signings, book clubs, personalized service, greentoadbookstore.com.